On this episode of the Edge Podcast, Michelle Creer, Senior Vice President at Clear Edge Marketing, interviews Julie Tavish, Managing Director at Talent Advisory Group. Julie shares with us her winding path between leaving the investment industry for the talent industry, as well as the gap she saw in the talent market that led her to launch Talent Advisory Group. Julie also shares the importance of culture, why she's loving the candidate-driven market, and so much more. I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in. I'm Michelle Creer, Senior Vice President at Clear Edge Marketing. Joining me today on the Edge Podcast is Julie Tavish, Managing Director at Talent Advisory Group. Thanks for joining me, Julie, and welcome.
Thank you, Michelle, for having me on today.
So, Julie, for those of our listeners not familiar with Talent Advisory Group, tell us, what does your company do?
So at Talent Advisory Group, we help companies maximize their talent potential to overcome growth hurdles and accelerate performance. We really focus on organizational design and human behavior in the workplace. What I've realized over the years is there's a lot of times where companies aren't clear as to what they need to have superior performance in a role, and they also are focused on making emotional decisions with hiring. And so we bring a more objective approach to outlining the ideal profile for superior performance within the role, and then how do you use that profile to find the talent to place them in the role? And then once you get them in the role, how do you use those that understanding of their behaviors and motivators and core competencies to continue to engage and accelerate their performance?
Fantastic. And I know you just launched the company earlier this year. We had met initially when I had been talking with Pete Davis with Impact Management Services. So kind of what gap were you seeing in the marketplace that really led you to decide to start up Talent Advisory Group?
Absolutely. I know that Pete had been seeing some of these gaps a lot sooner than I was seeing these gaps. But for the last couple of years, I was running Impact Management Services, where we did recruiting and staffing. And during that time period, what we really noticed is that there were three main things that I noticed. One is that there was a big disconnect when we were working with our HR folks and what the hiring managers wanted with respect to talent. And so recruiters would find specific individuals, and they were okay from a phone screen, from an HR director perspective, an HR manager. And then when they got to the hiring manager, they weren't the right talent for what they wanted. And so we had to bridge that gap between those two individuals. And then the other area that we focused on is that many companies are using traditional solutions to use against their current issues. And the landscape has changed so much that a lot of those old ways of thinking about roles and structures and stuff doesn't make sense anymore. And so to make sense of that, they really needed somebody to help them take them away from the day-to-day and look more strategically. So there was that gap. And then the last thing was something I mentioned earlier, was the emotional decision-making process. It's very easy for companies to look at resumes and understand from a hard skills perspective whether somebody has the competencies to do the job or not. But when you go to the soft side of things, it's very subjective and emotional. And so how do we take that emotion out? Because all humans walk into decisions with biases. And so those biases impact whether they decide to move forward or not move forward. So how do we bring some more objectivity to that? And I believe that Talent Advisory Group, you know, fills all of those gaps, because we really help companies look at, what are your growth goals that you want to achieve in the next 3, 5, 10 years? And what's your current organizational structure and landscape? And then once we have that understanding, is it going to fit where you want to go? Let's look more forward-facing versus past. And if not, let's create what that structure is going to look like or needs to look like. And within that structure, you have a bunch of different positions. And so what do those positions look like? And once we get those positions determined, how do we determine the ideal profile of the talent that will provide superior performance in that position? And so when we take that holistic approach, we're able to fill all of those gaps and make that decision-making process for the hiring manager as well as HR much more objective. There's always going to be an emotional piece to it, for sure, but it will bring a lot more objectivity and bring to the surface things that, you know, you don't see when somebody comes in for an interview.
Well, and I think that emotional piece is so interesting because, you know, as you said, you can look at somebody's resume and talk with them, and definitely their skills line up and their expertise and background. But I think there's also some of those soft skills as well, right? So maybe somebody's really good with people or really empathetic or something like that that makes it the right fit for a role, but you don't see that necessarily in the resume, and you can help someone develop some of those hard skills, right? So I think there's that balance between the actual like requirements of position and then also what is the right fit. And I don't know if that's also somewhat cultural. I know you mentioned emotional. There's some emotional decisions in there, some of the soft skills too. I think it's an interesting dynamic to try to find the right person, not just from a skills perspective, but how are they going to fit the role and grow and help the company, you know, succeed and evolve.
Absolutely. I have a client that I was with yesterday, and they're hiring a VP of sales, and we went through the process of creating, they have a sales director today. Their growth goals for the next 3 to 5 years require more of a VP level. And so we outlined what that role would look like. And then we created that ideal profile. And what was interesting, we had some candidates do some assessments. And in that process, we have a couple of candidates, and one which they really, really like has a really, really high sense of self. And in that, somebody that has a really high sense of self sometimes can be tougher to coach. And so you need to make sure that their core values align with your cultural core values. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you may be butting heads a lot. And so we had that discussion as a leadership team before they go on to the next interview, so they can dig into that to make sure that they're both aligned from a candidate perspective, mm-hmm. as well as a company perspective. Because even if they hire that person, if that candidate doesn't align with their core values, they're not going to be happy either.
Exactly. And I think it is the fit on both sides, right? So not only are you finding the right person for the client, but is that candidate going to be happy as well? Because again, if it's not a good match there, then you're going to end up with having to fill another position sooner than later. And nobody wants that.
Absolutely. I spend so much time with candidates when, you know, I was working at Impact and explaining to them that you are just as much part of this decision process as the company. And that's shifted over the years because, you know, the supply and demand has shifted where the talent really is driving the market today, where it wasn't like that in the past. And so, you know, we need to empower these candidates to make the right decision as well, because when they make the right decision, everybody wins.
Absolutely. So I want to shift the conversation just slightly to talk about starting up a business. And, you know, there's, I think, a lot of people nowadays are thinking about, gosh, if I'm not finding the right role for me, if I'm not happy in my job, maybe I could, you know, start my own consulting business or, you know, do something where they are becoming an entrepreneur. And that is certainly not for everybody. I think there are some definite benefits to being your own boss. And I think there are some roadblocks and just some things that make it a little bit daunting, I would say, to somebody. So having gone through that really recently, Julie, what have you learned so far? And is there anything, even though it's still early, anything you would have done differently at this point?
Oh my, there's so much in that question. but, you know, the one thing that I realized for a while ago was that I need to surround myself with other entrepreneurial-minded people because it's a different mindset. There are folks that like more traditional structure and safety, and entrepreneurs think a little bit differently. They're okay with that risk. And so if I'm coming to somebody with some of my challenges and they're of the mindset that you need to be more safe, it leans me more towards, you know, staying in a corporate environment. Whereas when I was with my friends that are more entrepreneurial in spirit, they were like, you just need to push through this. And they show you that empathy. I've been in your shoes and you're going to get past that. And that's really what you need when you're an entrepreneur, because you're going to go through ups and downs. You don't have a whole team of people. There's days where I'm like, okay, where's my next client going to come from? And you need that person to just keep giving you that little nudge to keep going and reminding you of why you made the decision that you made. The other thing that I would have done different, one of the things I would have done differently is I've hired a business coach, and he is phenomenal. And I would have hired him sooner in the process of making the decision to develop this new organization, because he's kept me grounded, and I would have done it sooner.
Interesting. Fascinating. I love that. So I know you were in financial services earlier in your career. What led you to make the jump into the talent management space?
It's so funny. This is, I got out of college. You're in high school and you're thinking about what you want to be when you grow up. And back when I was thinking about that, you would have all these counselors that would say, you're good at math, you need to go into finance, or you need to go into business, or you have a parent that's a doctor, you need to follow my footsteps, right? No one ever asked me, what are you passionate about? Because you're going to work a long time. So what are you passionate about? So I go into school, I get my CPA, I've got my finance degree, and I remember clear as day standing there with this CPA certificate thinking, I don't want to do this for the rest of my life.
Oh, gosh. What a daunting thought at that stage, right, in your life. Oh, my gosh.
I'm like, this is it? This is what I went to school for, and I graduated, and it's supposed to be this whole new world, and I'm becoming my own. And so I spent the first couple of years of my career, like, conforming to what I thought I should be, I worked at a bank and in the banking structure sometimes, and I know that they've changed a lot over the years since I grew up in that banking structure. It was, you have all these things you need to conform to, and it just wasn't me. So I was like, what do I do to get myself, use the skills that I've gained in school, but get into something a little bit more exciting? And so I took an interesting path, because I went into merger and acquisition due diligence, which was really such a great foundation for me, because not only did it bring in the financial piece, but it brought in the human element, because you're taking two companies and you're merging them together, or you're acquiring them. Either way, they still have to work together. So there's a lot more to think about than just the financials. And once I decided that lifestyle was too much for me when I wanted to get married and have kids, I started working for a company for limited brands in Columbus, Ohio. And in the real, I had two opportunities, one to go into corporate finance, one to go into store design construction finance. And I thought, I think the store design and construction sounds a little bit more interesting to me. So I took that position, and what I learned in that position was all about why you put certain elements in a store to drive consumer behavior, and why you put certain products based on the demographics of the area, and why you put certain products here in the front of the store and other products in the back of the store. So it was all about how do you get consumers' brains moving towards the final sale. And then I left there when we moved to Michigan. And when I left there, I started at the investment company. And when I started at the investment company, the CEO said, I have a challenge for you. And I said, okay, I'm always up for a challenge. And he said, we are very administrative focused here. We go out, we explain what their returns on their portfolio is, we ask them if they have questions, and then we leave. But the issue is we're not getting referrals from our clients. So we need to change this organization to be much more consultative. And you have that consulting background, so you know what it takes. And I said, I do, but I'm a finance person. What do I know about talent, right? And so I hired a consultant to help. So of the 10 years I was at the investment firm, I worked with this consulting firm for probably 6 of the 10 years. And they taught me so much about human behavior, organizational design. And I was able to take my business operations finance background and combine it with that and realize how important the right people in the right seats and the right culture are to driving your strategy forward. And so that's when I decided, okay, it's time for me to leave this finance world. I feel like I've got enough, knowledge and background and experiences to really start moving into that talent management area.
That is a super interesting path to from where you were to where you are now. And, you know, I picked up on something you said when you started explaining your background, and that is, you know, you're standing there with your degree in your hand. You're like, is this it? Is this what I'm supposed to do now? And I think when I think back to my own career, you know, I've stayed primarily within the field of study that I went to college for. But I'm one of the few ones of my college roommates that has. And I think it's so interesting because it's so early in your life where you're forced to make a decision about what you think you want to do for the rest of your life. You're 18, 19, 20, 21 years old, and you're being told you have to figure out what you're doing because you need to get this degree, and this is your job then. And I think it's so unfair to people because that's you don't have enough experience at that point in time to figure out what you want to do. And I think your story illustrates that so beautifully, Julie, about how you've been able to take all the different experiences that you've had and how they've gotten you to the place where you are now. And would you be here had you not had those experiences? And how valuable they are in helping you shape your career. And it's just, I think more people need to hear that story and realize that it's okay if I don't feel 100% confident in my 20s that I definitely made the right choice or know what I'm going to do. I think, you know, it's going to end up okay.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the favorite parts of my job today is as I'm working with my clients, and they have young adults in high school or college, heading into college, I always offer to help them with assessments and meet with them. And because I think about how successful I am now, and if I just was able to expedite that a little bit more. You know, how can I give that back to some of these other young adults? Because I'm not sure that the colleges and universities and schools systems have caught up with the fact that we're talking about humans that have different passions. And the best thing we can do is figure out how to leverage those, because they are our future. And if we're able to leverage those, they're going to take our future much further than we might have taken our future to date, just because we've kept ourselves constricted to these certain boxes that we felt like we had to stay in.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, there's been so much discussion just around managing the different generations in the workplace. And I think there's, what, 4 or 5 different generations right now that are actively in the workplace. But, you know, it goes deeper than that. It's each person in the workplace and knowing how to adjust your style, knowing how to motivate them in the right way, knowing how to help them figure out when they need a coach or a mentor or just what they need.
Absolutely. That is one thing that really frustrates me when I hear a leader say, well, the millennials this, the millennials that. And, you know, I've got 3 kids in the same generation, and I will be the first person to tell you that all 3 of those children are motivated by different things. Mm-hmm. And if I applied the same approach to each of them, I would not be maximizing their potential.
Absolutely. So I know when you were talking about your background and your history, one of the things that jumped out at me was, you know, catching up and looking at your LinkedIn profile the other day. You mentioned, there's a mention on there about the cultural challenges of bringing organizations together, and that you have managed some of that through your M&A activity in the past. You've touched on this a little bit earlier when you're talking about the right fit for candidates and companies, but talk a little bit about companies' culture and maybe your experiences with how important that aspect of a merger and acquisition is, right? I mean, you've got companies with completely different cultures. Trying to bring those two together could be disastrous just from a cultural standpoint, no matter how much sense it might make on paper from a financial standpoint.
Absolutely. And what's interesting is when we're doing due diligence, so often due diligence on acquisitions and mergers are so financially focused on customer concentration and margins and EBITDA. And oftentimes people don't realize that culture is such an important part of the decision-making process until they're already knee-deep in the integration and they're wondering, why is this not working? Mm-hmm. When I worked at Price Waterhouse, we were in, you know, Price Waterhouse merged with Coopers and Libran, and talk about 2 completely different cultures. And it took a while to get those 2 cultures to talk together. And when you don't have them talking together, you've got two boats rowing in opposite directions, fighting against each other, but yet you still have the expectations on the financial results, and the customers are expecting a certain culture and service to them, and that stuff all gets, you know, all of that goes and gets clouded by frustration between people not knowing what is the appropriate way to act? What is our culture wanting us to be? And do I fit in that culture? Right. It's hard for somebody to determine if they fit in that culture if they don't even know what the culture is.
I wonder, too, you know, the staffing and recruiting industry is just so full of mergers and acquisitions right now. I mean, you're hearing something all the time. And you hear news about it when it happens because it's newsworthy, obviously. But then when you get to that integration piece, you never hear anything down the road, like how successful actually was it? Because they're not going to disclose that information. To your point, it's all about, you know, the financial aspect of it. But I think there is so much fallout. It'd be interesting just to see, you know, how much turnover happens as a result of some of this activity that's happening in the marketplace, you know, and really how that's impacting the talent that's then available as well, just because once you go through that experience, you're right. You don't know if that company that you were with is going to be the right fit for you moving ahead. So that's just something that I've been thinking about lately when we're thinking about everything that's happening in the industry.
Absolutely. And if you have two people, I've seen where you've got two presidents and they're like co-running these mergers or this acquisition, and you've got to have one leader. You've got to have one leader pushing that culture down, and you've got to be one purpose, one why. And if you don't get clarity on that, it's really, really tough to get the financial results that you want to get.
Absolutely. So knowing that, you know, you launched Talent Advisory Group earlier this year, and it sounds like, you know, there's filling a big need in the marketplace. What excites you about where this industry is headed?
You know, there's a couple of things that are really, really driving me to get up every morning, and that is the talent's really driving the market. You know, the supply and demand has shifted all the power to the talent, and I believe that the talent is now starting to focus more on passion and contributing in the past and how they're contributing and their purpose versus I need to get a job that I make money. You know, the mindset is if I do what I'm passionate about, the money will come. And so I'm loving seeing that in the talent that's coming up here because they're more open about what it is that they want. And I truly believe they're being more authentic to who they are as well. The other thing is that I think companies have not kept up with where the market is heading. And now we're in a position of pain that's so bad that it's requiring us, you know, they don't have, you know, they've ignored it, but now they're not able to ignore it. So I think we're on the brink of a significant disruption on how we get things done. I mean, I'm flying to Chicago next week to meet with a company that just focuses on freelance folks, because I think there's a lot of opportunities for companies, instead of hiring ahead for a project, to bring somebody in. And, you know, those freelance folks, they want to have multiple different companies that they work for and do things. So how do we bring all this together? And so I think companies are at the point now where they're opening their minds to new ways of doing things and new organizational structures. You see organizational structures getting much flatter so that, you know, people are making decisions at much lower levels. People, ideas are filtering up instead of filtering down.
It's interesting to hear you use the word disrupt to talk about the industry, because I've heard that word from others. There's a technology solutions provider that I've been talking to that says that same thing. It's, you know, how do we, with this shifting world of work and how people want to work and where and when they want to work, how can companies better align themselves to be seen as attractive to those workers? And then how can you engage them in the right way as well? And how can you use technology to do so? How do you ensure that human touch is still there? I mean, I think that that word disruption is really, really accurate for what's happening in the industry right now. And I think these next couple of years are going to be really interesting to watch and see how this all plays out, for sure. You know, one final question for you here, Julie. You've given such great advice throughout our discussion here. If someone wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way they can do that?
They can go to our website, which is www.talentadvisory-group.com, or they can send me an email directly at jtabish@talentadvisory-group.com.
Perfect. Well, it was a real pleasure talking with you. You've got such an interesting background, and I knew a little bit of it, but I certainly learned a lot more today, and I love what you're doing. And I just wanted to thank you again for your time, Julie.
Thank you, Michelle. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this week's The Edge episode. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. And you can also email me at etatum, T-A-T-U-M, at clearedgemarketing.com. And let me know if you have any questions or if you want to hear about anything in particular as it relates to our Women in Staffing series or our marketing episodes. So just shoot me an email and I look forward to connecting with you. Thank you.